Yes, when you're running down this country, my country, you're walking down the fighting side of me. And this is the name of this program here on lightresistanceradio.com. Lots more news and views for our people. And of course, those are the European founding settler people of the Dominion of Canada, the United States of America, the Dominions of Australia, New Zealand, the Republic of South Africa, Rhodesia, and all of you who may be listening this morning in the European heartland. They have a very interesting letter from a good friend of mine. This is Brad Love, and Brad is, I call him the voice of the working man. He is the person who has had a lot of trouble with the law, all because he writes letters. Not threatening letters, you have to understand, but letters to MPs. In fact, he ended up being sentenced to 18 months in jail back in 2002 for having written letters on immigration to members of parliament, to about 19 members of parliament, and the then chief of police of York Region. Well, for the last decade, Brad has been up in Fort McMurray, and he sends me frequent reports on on the state of things up there, and he's pretty disillusioned. This was sent on the 22nd of September. Third day of work canceled because of rain. He works outdoors on construction. All of the natives hired on my crew have vanished from the workplace. They showed up late, did very little work anyway, left early with various excuses, and were gone for days anyway. They pay no income tax, and that's true. If they live on the reserve, they don't pay tax. Imagine that for you or me, and live in newer subsidized housing that I could never afford to get. They're still all hopelessly broke. Young whites that I work with are no better. A van picks us up, and we are late every day. My boss says nothing. Young, grumbling men from Newfoundland, they're called Newfies, are constantly playing with their cell phones. They have no discipline or work ethic, cannot take direction, all because their slovenly parents and lefty teachers did nothing for them. Now, we've got them. No wonder we're so far behind on this taxpayer-funded project. Yeah, the workforce is poor. The animal control workers in my brave city have Kevlar vests. I kid you not, he says. I sometimes take a $1.25 bus ride downtown. During the 3-mile ride, natives, drunks, homeless, and teens board the bus with a handful of excuses, but no money. $200 cell phones, $150 sneakers, but no $1.25, and the driver simply lets them on. No wonder our city's going broke. Our city election is in October, and most candidates are liberal, and lawyers or writers, all of whom would rat a guy out like me, and they have. When he makes complaints, they have complained to the police. Now you've got to understand, he doesn't make threats. He's not threatening to beat them up or anything like that. But in politically correct Canada, there's very, very little tolerance of criticism. 10 days ago, a portion of our huge Muslim population held a downtown march in support of the Rohingya. These are the Burmese Muslims. Say what? You could never get whites to act like this unless it was an anti-racism goofball rally. Many hotels here have closed. Three liquor stores gone. Building continues. Yet these buildings are unoccupied. While two more hotels have gone up. I cannot understand this. Still, third worlders pour in, yet no one is hiring. And if they are, wages are as low as in Toronto. See, Fort McMurray is up north, northern Alberta, and has historically had very high wages. A $161 million and years delayed seniors home may soon start construction. Syrian refugees got $1 billion, yet here in Fort McMurray, where everyone works 12-hour days when they do have work, with the government taking one half through taxes, unless you're a native, we get chump change for our seniors. Our number one mayoral candidate, Dan Scott, a lawyer, makes money at the from the temporary foreign workers business. His wife is Chinese, and yes, he once called the cops on me. That's on Brad Love for phoning him up with complaints about the way the city was spending money. See, they don't take criticism very well or very long. He's also big on showing up at homosexual and ethnic gatherings. The U.S. Attorney General now says gang problems are due to immigration. Gee, you think? He goes on to say, attend any court house or jail visiting area, either in Brampton, Toronto, New York, or L.A., and see who's in there. Oh, duh. Of course, if you and I make this sensible connection, the Attorney General here will have us rounded up. and the media will play it up as if we were reopening Auschwitz. Dan, I cannot see my town returning to its $35 an hour benchmark of several years ago. Too many third worlders are here now, and employers love it. Now it's a big competition, which will end up with all of us getting less. That is government policy to make us all poorer and angrier. If so, it's working. And he's quite right. Immigration, among many other evil effects, it has the result of keeping wages down, or even, in some cases, reducing them. Here's an interesting twist on an old story sent to me by my friend Al, who was a lawyer, and used to be in Edmonton, now he's in Kelowna, British Columbia. The Ant and the Grasshopper. This one is a little different. Two different versions, two different morals. The old version. The ant works hard in the withering heat all summer long, building his house and laying up supplies for the winter. The grasshopper thinks the ant is a fool and laughs and dances and plays the summer away. Come winter, the ant is warm and well-fed. The grasshopper has no food or shelter, so he dies out in the cold. Moral of the story? Be responsible for yourself. Modern version? The ant works hard in the withering heat and the rain all summer long, building his house and laying up supplies for the winter. The grasshopper thinks the ant's a fool and laughs and dances and plays the summer away. Come winter, the shivering grasshopper calls a press conference and demands to know why the ant should be allowed to be warm and well-fed while he is cold and starving. The Canadian Broadcasting Corporation, CTV, Global, and City News show up to provide pictures of the shivering grasshopper next to a video of the ant in his comfortable home with table filled with food. Canada is stunned by the sharp contrast. How can this be that in a country of such wealth, this poor grasshopper is allowed to suffer? Kermit the Frog appears on CBC News with, he's a famous radio host, not Kermit the Frog, with Peter Mansbridge, along with the grasshopper, and everyone cries when they sing, "It's Not Easy Being Green." People Against Poverty stages a demonstration in front of the ant's house, where the news stations film the group singing, "We Shall Overcome." Then Justin Trudeau has the group kneel down to pray for the grasshopper's sake. Our lesbian premier in Ontario, Kathleen Wynne, condemns the ant and blames former Prime Minister Stephen Harper, who is a Conservative. Former Prime Minister of Ontario, Premier Mike Harris, who is a Conservative. Harold Ballard, who was the owner of the Toronto Maple Leafs, and Conrad Black for the grasshopper's plight. Justin Trudeau and Scott Bryson, he's a homosexual member of the federal cabinet, explained in an interview with Wendy Nestle, she's another CBC big noise, that the ant has gotten rich off the back of the grasshopper, and both call for an immediate tax hike on the ant to make him pay his fair share. Finally, the provincial Liberal NDP coalition drafts the Economic Equity and Anti-Grasshopper Act retroactive to the beginning of the summer. The ant is fined for failing to hire a proportionate number of green bugs, and having nothing left to pay his retroactive taxes, his home is confiscated by the government's green czar, former Premier Dalton McGuinty, and given to the grasshopper. The story ends as we see the grasshopper and his freeloading friends finishing up the last bits of the ant's food, while the government house he is in, which as you recall, just happens to be the ant's old house, crumbles around them because the grasshopper didn't maintain it. The ant has disappeared in the snow, never to be seen again. The grasshopper is found dead in a drug-related incident, and the house, now abandoned, is taken over by a gang of spiders who terrorize and ransack the once prosperous and peaceful neighborhood. The entire nation collapses, bringing the rest of the free world with it. Moral of the story? Be careful how you vote in the next provincial election. I've sent this to you because I believe that you're an ant. You may wish to pass this on to other ants, but don't bother sending it to any grasshoppers because they won't understand it anyway. Yeah, yeah, a bit of an exaggeration, I guess, but in truth, there is often a great deal to be learned. Here's a scary and interesting statement sent to me by Kevin Goodrow of Peterborough, Ontario, and it's not Kevin's statement, incidentally. It's a statement. Actually by a prominent rabbi, this is a bit annoying. This was up earlier today. And I will try to get. I can get you the read. Give it to you precisely. Soon. However, let me give you the gist of it. The gist of it is that the rabbi said it will be a good thing for Jews when Europeans become a thoroughly race mixed society and eventually a minority, with Muslims coming on strong, and this is good for Israel because it will make Europeans weak and never able to organize against them. I find this something that people should be really be reminded of. And they should be reminded of quite often that the people, I think it's a fair question to ask, well, who is pushing massive third world immigration on us? If it's such a good thing, does Israel go for this massive third world immigration? Well, of course, the answer is no, it doesn't. Well, if diversity is good for us, why isn't it good for for Jews? Watching events on campus can sometimes get just a little bit comic. A group called the Revolutionary Student Movement of York University, that's in Toronto. Their logo is, gears, you know, typical communist logo. And in the center of the gears is the hammer and sickle. So we're no great mystery as to what they're all about. Well, it's a long, long statement, and I won't bore you with it. The Revolutionary Students Movement held an anti-colonial event called Tag the Flag on Tuesday, the 26th, in which we would discuss the history, recent and ongoing, of colonial dispossession and genocide in Canada. genocide in Canada. In case you missed that one, I'll give you I'll end the mystery. It's the treatment of the native people. They took exception to the fact that 7 members of students supporting free speech attended their event and objected to their calling students for free speech racist. And they explained that the revolutionary student movement was targeted. They targeted students for supporting free speech and lumping their logo with the fascist groups, colonialism, and genocide. They gave the same tired argument about how they were not in support of racism, sexism, transphobia, and genocide, and they were only interested in having dialogue with other groups. Accept that. That's this communist group, revolutionary student movement. And I'm reading from a very, very long statement that they put out, and which is mostly just a diatribe. They make it clear they equate opposition to immigration with violence. Let us be clear, says the revolutionary student movement at York University, which with the communist hammer and sickle in their logo. We have no interest in building and maintaining respectful relations with a group that we have seen attend anti-immigrant and thinly veiled racist and transphobic rallies. This particular group may not always be seen at the helm of violence that anti-fascist and anti-racist groups have faced. What? They're the ones. They're the ones practicing violence. The Antifa in Canada. And if they have not thrown fists, violence is not reduced to actions. It is also manifested through words. If you refuse to acknowledge a trans person by their pronouns, you are engaged in transphobic violence. This is the root to insanity. So if you refuse to call a she, who now thinks it's a he, by either, let me think, he or Z or whatever their delusion of the moment is, why then you're engaging in violence, not in frustrating them or annoying them, but in violence. If you criticize people of color for protesting statues and colonial figures more than you do actual white supremacists, you provide a cover for racist violence. Oh, really? So if you criticize Negroes or Indians for wanting to take down statues that are part either of Confederate history or Canadian history, of course, some of the Mi'kmaqs and Mi'kmaqs in Nova Scotia wanted the statue of Lord Cornwallis, the founder of Halifax, taken down. That has not happened yet, but it's absolutely fair to lump you in with fascism, then, especially if you organize among them, for fascism also appeals to racism and transmisogyny. We do not care what moral criticisms you give to fascists in private, and we doubt you even do that personally. Your public actions speak for themselves. This revolutionary student movement across Canada will continue to organize against students supporting free speech and other free speech groups. No platform for fascism. Or those who cover for fascists. Of course, the revolutionary student movement is hard pressed to explain just who are fascists. Really, anybody they don't agree with. But I want to read that conclusion again. The revolutionary student movement across Canada will continue to organize against students supporting free speech and other free speech groups, like CAFE. No platform for fascism or those who provide cover for fascists. You've got to understand just how anti-free speech these people are. Just how much they want to stop discussion. It's not that they feel they've got better arguments and can win a debate or discussion. They simply want to shut it down. They go on in their rant against students supporting free speech. The most notorious guest and speaker at the event, that was an event in July, supporting the Halifax Five. And these were five members of the Canadian Armed Forces, the Canadian Navy, who on their own time in civvies, came with the Red Ensign, Canada's traditional flag, to counter-protest, a protest that's in front of Lord Cornwallis' statue by Mi'kmaq Indians and some of their lefty supporters. Now, they didn't disrupt the rally. They came, they sang God Save the Queen, and some of the Indians engaged in some vulgar talk at them, telling them to get the fuck off Indian land, and they were told, well, this is not Indian land, this is Canada. Duh, very good. There was an immediate furor, outrage on the part of some of the Indians, the radical left, demanding that something be done about these soldiers. So they were immediately roundly condemned by our turban-wearing minister of defense, who said there would be no room for bigotry in the Canadian Armed Forces. These people were speaking as civilians. They were not in Navy uniform, never claimed to be speaking for the Navy, and they were their group name was the Proud Boys. They were, of course, also denounced by the admiral in charge of the Atlantic Fleet and by the General Jonathan Vance, the commander-in-chief of the Canadian Army, who a few weeks later would prance at the Gay Pride Parade in Ottawa. Now, I would think a soldier, the chief soldier, as a soldier, joining the Gay Pride Parade was a disgrace. Anyway, that's all by way of introduction to this. The most notorious guest speaker at the rally that was held to support free speech for the Halifax Five was Paul Fromm, a Canadian neo-Nazi who has connections to the KKK and David Duke and has a radio show on Stormfront and denies the Holocaust happened. Well, I'm not a neo-Nazi. Never said I was. I'm a nationalist. I am a populist. National socialism was another place, another time. Connections to the Ku Klux Klan? Well, I've got connections with lots of people. Yes, I'm a great friend of Representative Dr. David Duke, and I've spoken at some of his meetings. I had a show on Stormfront, and denies Fromm also runs the Canadian Association for Free Expression. Students in support of free speech, seeing the bad PR they were receiving, decided to disavow Fromm and claim they didn't know who he was. This is hard to believe, considering he introduced himself when he was speaking and hung out with them and the rest of the audience before and after the event. Well, actually, that much of it is true. Students supporting free speech, frankly, embarrassed themselves by pretending to know they didn't know who I was. I introduced myself. Now, if they didn't know who I was, well, gee, I guess I'm not very Very important. Oh, here, further on their little website, there's a picture of their organizing table at York University. Revolutionary student movement. Anti-imperialist, anti-colonial, anti-capitalist. Okay, well, I think we get the picture. oh, and then they do try a little bit of humor. Happy fall on their pictures of children, pictures of leaves and cats and nuts, you know, like acorn type nuts. And here's the attempt at humor. I know, I'm telling you, it's funny. You better get ready to massage your aching ribs. Happy fall of the bourgeoisie. Oh, oh how clever. so, we've got the... the communists making it quite clear that they follow a policy of no platform for fascists, which basically is anybody with whom they disagree. Now, they are the ones who should be exposed for their just primitive bigotry. Well, this is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. I'm sure were they listening to my show, and I hope they are, but I rather doubt it. It's past their bedtime. that they'll be particularly annoyed with this. I'm going to play for my musical interlude a couple of songs by Rebel Sun. First one is Sitting Up Drinking with Robert E. Lee. I honor Robert E. Lee. I know you do too. Rebel Sun certainly does. Sitting Up Drinking with Robert E. Lee.
I pulled up in the yard and saw a cotton field out back. He invited me to sit with him and share a fifth of Jack. He had crisscross bars and 13 stars blowing in the wind. He said, save your Confederate money, boy, cause the South will rise again. And Robert E. Lee did not like the Northerners one bit. He was a rebel and he knew it, and he of a shit. We've been talking about Dixie and how old times used to be, and I've been sitting up drinking with Robert E. Lee. We talked about his troops and the rebel infantry and us 13 southern states that live in infamy. As he took another swig of his black label whiskey, said that Yankee pride don't mean a damn thing to me. He spoke about his men and how they always fought so brave, and how they wove their sacred flag, don't any life they gave. He struggled to gain independence for his southern ground. He stood up for his cause and never wants to eat back down. And Robert E. Lee did not like them Northerners one bit. He was a rebel and he knew it, and he didn't give a shit. We've been talking about Dixie and how old times used to be, and I've been sitting up drinking with Robert E. Lee. Drink 'em up. It was 2 o'clock a.m. and the fire was getting low. So I thanked him for our talk, cause it was time for me to go. While walking to my car, I turned to thank him once again. But the light was bare, there was nothing there but rocks and dirt and sand. Was it my imagination playing with my head? I remember hearing clearly every single word he said. Every movement, every gesture, every tear that his heart shed. His dream is still alive, even though his body's dead. Robert E. Lee's memory lives on in the Southern soul, along with his boys who fought and died out in the cold. Lee was a man with tons of courage, a hero without a doubt. He was a man with determination, he was a man from the South. And Robert E. Lee did not like them Northerners one bit. He was a rebel and he knew it, and he didn't give a shit. He said, son, I've got many stories to tell. Ulysses S. Grant, kiss my ass and go to hell. We've been talking about Dixie and how old times used to be. And I've been sitting up drinking with Robert E. Lee. Drink him up, bro.
That's Rebel Sun, sitting up drinking with Robert E. Lee. I'll play another song by Rebel Sun, and this is Mr. Confederate Man, a really touching story.
I was just a little boy in elementary school. English and math and science class, learning the golden rule. I learned how to add and how to subtract, how to multiply and divide. I learned about bugs and I learned about plants and I learned how to read and write. But my most favorite class of all was my last class of the day, when my history teacher would tell us tales of old times long gone away. I was amazed at the way she knew all the people and their names and the places and the dates. That's when I first learned about General Lee and his 13 rebel states. One day she came to school with a big brown grocery bag. She opened it up, we all helped her hold up this great big egg-shaped flag. She said, class, now only a fool will tell you this flag is a symbol of hate. It represents the men who fought and died with pride for our Confederate states. Your assignment tonight, I want you to write, I want you to pretend that one of these brave men came back to life. Now what would you say to him? Well, the school bell rang and I thought as the bus carried me across town. I got out my pencil and my notebook pad, and this is what I wrote down. I wrote, Mr. Confederate Man, I'd like to shake your hand for giving your life for Dixieland.
Mr. Confederate Land. The next day in history class, I put my paper on the teacher's desk. Then she called me up in front of everyone because she said she liked mine the best. As I walked up to the head of the class, my teacher smiled and she nodded at me. Then I saw a tear roll down her cheek as I began to read. I read, Mr. Confederate Man, I'd like to shake your hand for giving your life for Dixieland, Mr. Confederate Man. Well, I was at home reading through just the other day, when I ran across my old teacher's name and I saw she had passed away. With a bittersweet smile, I looked up at my wall, a wrinkled paper in an old wood frame, where underneath pencil words almost faded away, she had marked a great big red A. Plus, Mr. Confederate Man, I'd like to shake your hand for giving your life for Dixieland, Mr. Confederate Man. I wrote, Mr. Confederate Man, I'd like to shake your hand for giving your life for Dixieland, Mr. Confederate Man.
That's Rebel Son and Mr. Confederate Man. Going to play one more tune here in the musical interlude, and this is a song I know you'll like. This Confederate song, The South Will Rise Again. friends Hank Williams Jr. and God Bless Dixie ended up on this video with God Bless Dixieland. I want to thank Dr. James Sanchez in Seattle for sending this story my way. Media ignore mass shootings in Tennessee because it doesn't fit their leftist narrative. The media, eager to bury the story of the mass shooting at a church in Tennessee on Sunday recently, in which a Sudanese immigrant, who is black, murdered a white mother of two and wounded six others, including the pastor, has totally ignored the incident, conveniently using the NFL Trump controversy as grist for its mill. Emmanuel Kadega Samson from Sudan, first murdered Melanie Smith, 39, in the parking lot, then entered the Burnett Chapel Church of Christ and started shooting. He was only stopped by the heroism of an usher, Caleb Engel, 22, who was pistol whipped in the face, but held tight until Samson accidentally shot himself. Engel then retrieved his firearm from his car and stood guard over Samson until the police arrived. Matt Walsh, in a powerful column in The Blaze, pointed out, maybe you read about this story on page 14 of the newspaper. I'm not exaggerating either. The New York Times put this mass shooting, that's one person killed, six whites injured, on page 14. The front page was dominated by athletes kneeling. These are mostly Negro athletes. Or perhaps you heard it mentioned in a 12-second blurb at the end of the cable newscast last night. I flipped through a few different channels and didn't hear it even mentioned one time. But maybe they got around to it. Of course, in a 60-minute broadcast, they had to allot at least 59 minutes to cataloging the posture of NFL players. If you managed to sit through all of that, you may have heard, oh, P.S., there was a mass shooting at a church today. Okay, that's all. Good night. The end. Walsh noted, the church shooting does no favors to the liberal narrative, so it must be ignored. The shooter was black. He's a Sudanese immigrant. He killed a white woman. He was stopped by a good guy with a gun. If the races were switched and you removed the pesky pro-Second Amendment element of the story, perhaps they might have had a fighting chance to compete with choreographed protests in professional sports for airtime. Yes, had it been a white man, oh yeah, like that Dylan Roof fellow, who'd gone into a black church, oh yes, and shot people, well, it would have been the head of the news. And furthermore, as a journalist myself, it's not just whether it's covered or not, but the emphasis it's given. Does it head off the news? Well, that means it's really important. Does it get repeated? You know, does the story get repeated? Is it carried up the next morning, on the next morning? In other words, as we say in the news business, does it have legs? You know, it's not just a one mentioned once. But then there's comments on it the next day. Somebody denounces it. Somebody else has something to say. No, nothing. The story is killed, virtually killed. Engel has tried to downplay his incredibly heroic act, issuing a statement lauding the police and first responders. That, of course, garnered him no media attention. Now, Engel is the brave usher who who actually tackled the Sudanese immigrant, Emmanuel Kadega Samson. Walsh concluded with a brutal takedown of the media's moral lassitude. In case you're wondering, this is why people despise you. You know, that people get it. They get that you are hopelessly and terribly biased. And it's important in studying bias that it's not just what is said or what's reported. It's often what is not reported and not said. Well, here's an interesting censorship story sent by Frank Raymond. Frank Raymond is the pen name for an author of some very good books about the plight of whites. His latest book is Sweet Dreams and Terror Cells. Frank Raymond, Sweet Dreams and Terror Cells. Check it out on Amazon. I'm gagged and cannot speak freely. but I can point you towards Sweet Dreams and Terror Cells. Read it and spread it far and wide. It's a red pill. It makes a difference. Red pill, of course, means it's something that will wake up sleeping people. And that's a good thing. Anyway, and although it's not Frank Raymond himself who is being silenced, this is Georgia Peach, host of Georgia at KSCO Radio. KSCO Radio. And yes, it's true. As Frank Raymond has told you, I've been ordered to refrain from speaking on politically incorrect topics and cannot allow callers to broach them or even mention the dread words. I've always said that I don't hate any race or group and do not call for harm or ill treatment of any race or of people. But I do stand for the existence, prosperity, and happiness of my people, the Caucasian people, and for my people to have an existence and a future. They need land and territory of their own, streets and neighborhoods of their own, schools and community centers of their own. The forces of censorship and control have told me that it is undesirable that I speak on my radio show for my people. That's, of course, if you're white, if you're a Native Indian, no problem. If you're a Negro, no problem. But all over America, all over the Western world, there are voices slandering, defaming, and vilifying white people. And no one objects to that. Well, I won't quite say no one. Certainly very few people in the mass media object to it. It is now the conventional thought and morality that white people cannot have a country or even a city of their own, and that it is criminal and racist to resist the invasion of our lands and societies, the robbing of our resources, and the replacement of our people, by all means, legal and illegal. No one censors that. On the contrary, the powers that be own, operate, and control the television stations, the newspapers, the movie production companies, and the so-called education system that incites and implements this genocide by manufactured consent. The PTV allows and enables voices that speak and mind-bend against our people, but they silence the voices raised in defense of our people, my voice included. Truly, we are an occupied people, a people marked for genocide. And this is Georgia Peach, the host of Georgia at KSCO Radio. At this dark moment, I point you to a ray of light. I and many of my friends have learned a lot from the novel Sweet Dreams and Terror Cells. Write that down, Sweet Dreams and Terror Cells. Check it out. Think about getting a copy on the internet. It has changed a lot of minds, including the minds of diehard liberals. It's a book that even awakened, racially aware white men and women can learn from, and that they can give to their unaware, apolitical, and liberal friends, brothers, and sisters. Because we all talk about white identity, a few persons know the elements of that identity. I was surprised to find out about my identity from the book, and to realize the only white people that only white people do crossword puzzles, bird watching, animal rescues, dog shows, and murder mystery evenings. I was stunned to discover that while we have millions of miles of hiking trails with viewing points and maps, there are no hiking trails in India or the Congo. Frank writes of the deeper spiritual elements of the Caucasian identity, of a mind rooted in the mysteries of the forest that is fringed by the changing sea. Today, even the most apolitical person can see their neighborhoods are being destroyed, overcrowded, and transformed into slums of concrete, asphalt, and neon, with massive inflows of totally alien people. Their present is blighted, their future grim. But this person is confused and befuddled. Give him or her a copy of Sweet Dreams and Terror Cells so that he or she may grasp the big picture and see what is really going on. The assault upon our people is cunning, and the people are bewildered. But to use the words of one reviewer, this complex issue is made simple and entertaining. Today, every white person should read this book. It is good fiction, entertaining, and it is literature of the highest rank. but like George Orwell's book 1984, it is fiction that makes it easier to understand and grasp the reality of our times. And I say once again, go online and get yourself a copy of Frank Raymond's book, Sweet Dreams and Terror Cells. Frank Raymond, R-A-Y-M-O-N-D, and this is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. Back with you again tomorrow, same time, midnight Eastern time. This show is repeated at 8 in the morning and 4 in the afternoon. All of these are Eastern Standard Time. And I sign off tonight, as I always do, with the anthem of the real Canada, the Maple Leaf Forever.